Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2009. That's right, I'm recording on a Tuesday this time. Yvonne and I usually record on a Monday, Monday around 3 UTC, which to those of you in the United States is actually kind of Sunday night, but it's Monday UTC, and so this time around, I don't have Yvonne with me. And, you know, it was one of those things, you know, at the last minute, I had to cancel for our usual time because something came up and I wasn't going to be home. And then so we decided to do it again at around this time, which it's about Tuesday at 3 UTC right now. We were going to do it at 2 UTC. And then Yvonne couldn't make it. So, quick solo show for me. You know, first of all, there are a couple things I usually say at the end of the show, so let me say them right here at the beginning. First of all, thanks everybody who actually listens here. Second of all, tell your friends if you like the show. We always like new listeners coming in, and we've had a few new listeners lately. Third, if you have anything to say, send me an email at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or comment on the post at abelsmay.com where I announce the show. And we'd love to hear from you and we'll respond to what you say on the show. Anyway, enough of that intro kind of stuff. Not much to talk about this time. I will do a couple brief things. One, you know, it is December 22nd, which means there is a holiday coming up in a few days. And, you know, I've been doing the gift thing fairly limited this year, as it has been for the last few years, just some basically close family only. You know, there were years in the past where I also did this kind of thing for, you know, a wider circle of friends. But the last few years sort of concentrated it down just to family. No offense out there to any friends of mine. It's just, you know, we've been narrowing it down a little bit. And also I was tying my gift giving to, like, who sent me email, and I'm, like, 4 years behind on figuring that out, so I'll get to that eventually. But anyway, you know, today was the very last thing. We mailed out a couple of gifts to my parents, actually, to each of my parents. And, well, you know, it's that last-minute kind of thing, and so in order to get it there on time, there was a really big UPS bill, and it really didn't make sense, and it would have been better if I'd sent it, yeah, just even a few days ago, you know, but I wasn't ready, you know, I didn't, because of poor planning on my part, or, you know, I have the excuse, I was like, you know, I had the stuff ready to send, basically, well, not quite ready to send, I had to do a little bit of stuff with it, but, you know, I basically could have done the things I needed to do anytime in the last 2 weeks or so, but, you know, things kept coming up, going out to do this, going out to do that, spending a time doing this, spending a time doing that, and, you know, so it didn't happen until this weekend, and so we mailed it on, Monday, basically. And things cost a lot more when you're only a few days away from Christmas Eve, and you have to get a box there that weighs 3.5 pounds, you know, so, oh well. Anyway, holiday fun. We also have the tree up. We had an enjoyable time with the tree because we bought the first tree. And yes, I said first tree because we bought a tree and then it started prematurely drying out. And we did all the stuff you're supposed to do. We watered the tree. We had the little places where it can drink, and, you know, we did all the stuff we're supposed to do, but the thing started drying out in patches. There was, like, parts of the tree that were just fine, and then there were big patches that were turning brown and brittle, and things were already falling apart, and we still had, you know, more than a week until the holiday, and, you know, of course, Brandy and I had recently watched one of these YouTube videos that's going around of how fast a live Christmas tree, which is what we have. Well, it's not really live anymore because they cut it down, so it's in the process of dying. I guess it's alive, sort of, but you've cut off its roots and stuff. So it's like, I guess the equivalent for a human being, I guess, is, if you cut everything off below the torso, you'd live for a little while, I guess, and that's sort of what's happening to the tree. So just think of your tree. If you're there looking at your Christmas tree right now, just think of it as a creature who has had the lower half of its body chopped off and is slowly dying in agony, because that fits with the spirit of the season and stuff. Anyway, we did all the stuff we're supposed to do. It's all drying out. We saw the video on YouTube of, like, you know, how fast these things go up in flame, basically. You know, if you light a Christmas tree on fire, even one that's not really all that dry, that thing goes up like a torch. And, you know, there's some nice videos. Google them if you haven't seen them already. You know, basically showing how fast, you know, a living room, like, explodes into an absolute inferno once you light the Christmas tree. Now, I'm not advocating lighting any Christmas trees. And in fact, we were like, you know, this tree is probably not safe. I mean, we have, you know, LED lights that don't get hot and stuff, but still, you never know. And Brandy was all upset. It's brown, it's red, it's ugly, it's dying, it's dead, you know. So we, of course, had to get a new tree. So we went back to where we got the tree from. They told us, and they gave us the second tree at cost, so it was like half price. So we brought a second tree home. We threw the old one out. We got the new one all set up. So the whole rigmarole happened a couple times. And basically, Brandy in our household is the one who's into the whole decorating thing. You know, Amy and I sort of passively participate and occasionally help a little bit, but she's the one who's really into it. So she does it. I hold the baby. Amy helps a little bit. I help with putting up the tree and stuff, but, like, actually putting all the little balls and lights on, you know, my favorite Christmas tree of all time was a little tiny, like, 3-foot live, like, actually still alive, like, in a pot tree that I got, and I just put a single stripe of lights on it, and I was content and happy, and I thought that was the best tree ever. But no, Brandy likes to have all the lights and everything in just the right place and all looking perfect and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, she can have at it. And anyway, so we're all set now, I guess. So all of you out there who are doing whatever you're doing, whether you're doing holiday gift giving or whether you're not, you know, enjoy the season. And I don't say this from, you know, just to be clear, I don't say this from a religious point of view at all, because I'm not, you know. Christmas to me is not, you know, any sort of, you know, celebrating the baby Jesus getting eaten by a dinosaur or whatever was supposed to happen at that time. It's all about the Santa Claus and the presents and the family and, you know, the lights and all that kind of stuff. It has none of those other disturbing, you know, sort of mythical, superstitious, cultish, you know, religious associations. It's just all about, you know, the fun stuff. Anyway, I do like the songs, though. I like Christmas carols. I admit I like Christmas carols, you know, but not because of what they say, but because it is pretty and stuff. I don't know. Anyway, so happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever other holidays are going on right now. Is Kwanzaa happening? Is Ramadan happening? Ramadan's over, isn't it? I don't know. Whatever, you know. Happy December, happy solstice. Enjoy. Anyway, I'm going to take a break, and then we will continue on with just a little bit of other stuff, not very much. And so we'll be back after this, your Poem of the Week. This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel. Gord Has Remembered, by Reb Livingston. This is what Prophetess of Gord says. She who cremated the Hemlouts and stressed everyone out, who sprained his mirth and all that succumbs it, who gives mist to her nubs and nerve to those who stalk it. I, Gord, have called you in consciousness. I will scold your wakeland. I will detain you and press whore you into a coven grunt under the steeple and invite the gentle pen. In the cinched mumblings, Prophetess relinquished the lamented to Magi in his boomtown. To a versed mouth, pleasure in the ripened quilt, a segment of Tsarina. The versed mouth was damsel. The lamented consented and cried, "Grievance, you hyphenating fakers! Your reward is this myth." "I am prophetess's surcoat," damsel added. "May I gleam as self and heartwood." Then the lament lessened. For more like this, go to notelmotel.org, with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. And we're back, and our poet of the week this time, from Notel Motel, in case you didn't notice, was Reb Livingston, who is one of the proprietors of Notel Motel, and a longtime friend of Yvonne and my, a longtime friend of Yvonne and I, from our college days. So there you go, one of her actual own poems, because she is celebrating Rebecca Mass this week, because her birthday happens to fall on Christmas Day, and you know, she's always kind of resented that, I think. Anyway, what else is there? You know, this healthcare and climate and all this kind of stuff. And if Yvonne was here, we would have a nice big conversation, probably, about a couple of these. Right now, the healthcare thing looks like the Democrats got their 60 votes. They've done the first of a series of votes that they need to do. I guess the Republicans are hoping that Senator Byrd from West Virginia keels over and dies and can't make a vote or something like that. But otherwise, it looks like this is going through. A lot of progressives are really upset because this isn't everything they wanted. They feel like Obama could have fought more for stuff, blah, blah, blah. It's a big giveaway to the insurance companies. I'm not too sure I'm thrilled on this. This is basically a mandate that you have to pay health care coverage with some subsidies and a few other things thrown in. You know, I don't know. Will it make a difference? Probably. Will it, on balance, be better than worse? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not too convinced, but I guess I'm willing to... Well, I guess I have no choice. We'll see what happens. There are some places where this could die in conference if the House doesn't go along with the severe compromises that the Senate made. But basically, the House also knows that if they try to swing this back and add back in, you know, the public option or various other stronger components than what coming out of the Senate, then it'll just die in the Senate again. So I think you're probably going to see something very similar to what exists right now come through the process and actually go to Obama's desk, and, you know, he will tout it completely as, you know, they managed to get healthcare through, and it may not be everything they wanted, but it's a, you know, a bunch of big changes, more protections for folks, prohibitions against discriminating against pre-existing conditions, subsidies for low-income people to help them buy the now mandated healthcare, etc. So, I mean, they're clearly going to be touting it as a big victory, and the question is whether there will be, you know, effects of this that are negative that are seen by anybody by the time we get to the next couple of elections. And whether or not actually people see effects themselves, whether or not Republicans can make hay out of it. And they certainly will try. And the question is whether they'll get traction there. And I think that a lot of that's yet to be seen. You know, because you got one side will be able to say, you know, we made all these things better. The other side will be able to say, well, yeah, maybe you had some effect there, but look at all these things you made worse, and we'll see. I think it's ending up very close to the muddle that if you go back and listen to some of our old shows from, I don't know, many moons ago, where we were talking about healthcare. I mean, I basically said, you're going to get something, but it's going to be crap. Because, you know, at some point it became clear that Obama and company really didn't care what was in the bill. Not that much anyway. They just wanted to pass something. And it looks like that's what they're going to do. They're going to pass something, but it's not going to have anything really radical in it that, that does any sort of systemic change in the system. They are noodling around the edges to take the existing system and perhaps make it a little bit better for a few folks. And, you know, incremental change you can believe in, to paraphrase the poster. And this is basically what what Obama has been doing. And, you know, I somewhat get baffled by all the people on the left who are like, oh my God, Obama's selling out. He's not doing all the things he promised. Where's the change? Blah, blah, blah. But again, anybody who read his books, anybody who paid attention to what he was actually saying, anybody who actually listened to the red state versus blue state speech at the 2004 convention should have realized from the very beginning, this man is a centrist. This man is one who is all about finding compromise. This is somebody who's all about, you know, finding the middle position that will take the best of both worlds. And maybe the Republicans haven't been cooperating here so that, you know, he doesn't have a partner on the other side he can really do, but he is not the person who is going to push a radical agenda. You know, the left, you know, got all excited and I think in part believed the hype of the right wing about how they described who this man was, but he never was that. He never claimed to be that. You pay attention to what he said. It was never about that. And it still baffles me when people seem to be surprised by this. I mean, really, I mean, he's doing what he said he would do, mostly, you know, and he's certainly showing the temperament that he always seemed to have. I don't know. I don't know. But people are surprised. I think a lot of people were just reading their own hopes and what they wish he was into him, even when he said something different. I mean, again, you know, there's the Afghanistan example too. Everybody's here expecting, you know, upset that he hasn't decided to pull out of Afghanistan when the entire campaign he was saying how we needed to treat Afghanistan more seriously and put more resources there. So he goes and does that and people are surprised. Duh. Do I necessarily agree with him? I think maybe we should have gotten out. But we didn't, and it shouldn't be a surprise. He's doing what he said he would do. One final thing, and then we're out. Climate, yeah, Copenhagen, some sort of agreement came out of there. I think this meshes exactly with what I said with Yvonne last week, which is nothing worthwhile. I mean, the bottom line here is, even the wildest things being imagined at the conference, let alone the weak tea that came out of it, don't even begin to address anything at the levels that the scientists say would have to be done in order to actually make a difference here. And basically what we came out of it was, you know, just sort of a bunch of people agreeing, yeah, this sounds like an important thing, we'll try to do better, without any sort of real commitments around anything meaningful, and certainly nothing that, you know, goes towards being an actual enforceable legal treaty that's binding on anyone. Not even close. And even if some of the stuff that was being talked about in terms of the goals and stuff they'd mentioned were legally binding and stuff, it not enough to make a difference. Not enough to make a real difference. And so, which brings me back to what I was telling Yvonne last week, you know, nothing's really going to happen here until everybody feels pain. And at that point, it, you know, according to what the scientists are saying, it may be too late to really do anything that's going to reverse, that's going to cause a substantial difference in the short term. And so I think, you know, I really think it's you know, a matter of, and you know, then at that point, people will figure out what they need to figure out. I don't think you're going to have the human race going extinct or anything. You will figure out solutions. You will have people figuring out, A, How to live with it. You know, forget preventing global warming. You know, global warming is happening. You're going to be 3-4 degrees warmer, whatever. And here's the impact on the world. How do we live with it? How do we make this work? How do we continue, you know, to move on as a worldwide society? And, you know, to be frank, that may involve, you know, a lot of natural disaster and things that, you know, are not ideal at some point in the future. You'll have pain going on. You'll have bad things happening. And in the end, we'll figure out how to rise above it. But in the meantime, it may not be all that pleasant. But, you know, that's A. B is geoengineering. And I know people, like, yeah, the problem with geoengineering is it's really, really high risk, because if you don't know what you're doing, you could make things worse or make things bad in different ways. But, you know, forget this, let's burn less carbon. People will burn less carbon when they run out of it in the ground. We're going to get to peak oil if we haven't already. Oil production is going to go down, and eventually prices will get to the point where people will stop using it. People are not going to have a significant change in their behavior until there's no way to avoid it. And at that point, there will be technological innovation for using other resources. There will be all kinds of things happening there. But, you know, if in the meantime we've, you know, made a continent too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, figure out how to air condition the whole planet, you know. I don't know. Yeah, I've said this kind of thing before. Like, you know, let's cause an intentional nuclear winter to cool things down. Yeah, seriously though, there are things that can be done. I don't, you know, in some magical fairy world, everybody in the world could suddenly decide that they want to cut their consumption in half because it's better for the whole world, and maybe that would be good enough to cause a major effect and reduce things. But I see no realistic scenario where everybody's going to suddenly decide. I mean, I certainly know I'm not going to suddenly decide, you know, I'd rather not drive my car. I'd rather do something else. I would rather not ever fly a plane again because it's bad for the environment. Or, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, I'm still going to keep using my stuff, thank you very much, until I can't. And that may sound selfish, but I think it's realistic. And, you know, but at some point, the balance will change on its own. And, you know, I just don't think there's any realistic way of waving a magic wand and changing everybody's behavior. And I think that doing it by legislation or government fiat is highly intrusive and wrong. I don't believe in forcing people to do the right thing. I believe that, you know, it's all well and good when people decide to do the right thing, but forcing them to do it is wrong. I rebel at stupid recycling laws. Like, recycling might be a great idea, but you make it a law that says I have to, and I'm going to take every single opportunity I can get away with to put recyclables in the trash, even if I might not otherwise do it. Because I'm just bitter like that. Bitter and, you know, anyway. Anyway, I think that's it. Enough for today. I've got to go wrap some gifts, and we got to go, I think we're going to watch some family TV. You know, some fun stuff like that. So I'll wrap it up. Anyway, thank you again for listening. I won't say all the stuff about telling your friends and stuff because I did it at the beginning of the show. But that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner. Join us again next week. Goodbye.